maybe you can the warm-up question.
It was really great to see it again, and every time I see it, and I saw it quite a lot of times, I'm astonished that there are so many more levels coming in. And I may start with something. When we discussed with Candice, we were really delighted to see so many of the images and references that are also part of the narration of the show that you have in the film. And we had this whole, we looked at the picture by Sedat Pakay showing Baldwin in the sheets and in Istanbul. And then you have sent us this image with a woman running in the tulips and the other tulips arriving. And so it is the title of the film, and it is this really central image. And at several moments in the film, the question of the tulips comes again. And we saw each other a couple of days ago, which allowed me to understand a lot of things about Turkish history that I didn't get. And I think it's important to have this as a start.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think it's really important for you to understand because, you know, it's, as you can hint, you know, I mean, for me, it's important, actually. So I put it in the title, Tulips. What does it mean for me? So first of all, tulips, before it became a mania in Amsterdam and in Europe, as you could have followed in the film, it became quite popular to, you know, have the certain varieties of, like, you know, tulips in different colors and everything in Istanbul. And that era, that was quite of a commonplace practice, is called tulip era. This is the era, actually, where it's believed, actually, the Ottomans had prosperity, and it was the golden age of Ottoman Empire, which ended, like, you know, with the uprisings and, you know, like, you know, Marie Antoinette. basically, people were, like, you know, so much dived into, like, you know, corruption and everything, so people had to take over. So the tulip, I understand, is a symbol of the hierarchy, or to put it this way, it's the public image of the turkey, because, you know, you know it from the tiles, from the handcrafts, from İznik tiles. So it's the symbol of Istanbul. Even the Turkish Airlines is, like, you know, using tulips as a symbol. So it's quite a strong image for me, related to the questions of power and hierarchy. So I understand this is a prolific metaphor, because, as you can also follow, there are a lot of popular figures, figures from the pop culture, like Ajda Pekkan, Orhan Gencebay, or then at some point this child star, Emrah, pops up, who is of Kurdish origin. So I understand this film is being a film about, or a criticism, or, like, you know, slightly loose commentary on the racial injustices in Turkey. And it's maybe rather a film about white Turks. You know, I think when I'm saying this, you know, I also include myself, or, you know, affiliate myself, like, you know, with that trajectory, as I'm doing with Ajda Pekkan, Orhan Gencebay, but also most of the friends of James Baldwin back then. So it is maybe a commentary of that, or what it gets lost, actually, from when we look at things retrospectively from now backwards. So this, you know, why it's tulips. The white tulip is, like, you know, being the most precious, or, like, you know, the beautiful thing to acquire, plays a role, but that it's being slightly off. In Turkish, it means kırık beyaz. Kırık is actually, off-white means kırık beyaz in Turkish, but kırık means also faggot or queer, Maybe queer would be a better translation. So there's also something actually that I try to elaborate on that. Maybe it's becoming about me back, after all. It's basically also, you know, there are some autobiographical stuff. So, you know, it's also about me. As it's being like, you know, about my family and in the recent history of the Republic of Turkey. So, yeah, I don't know if I covered most of the question.
I think it's a good start. So you also told me a bit about the context, about this demonstration, about the moment where the repression against the Kurdish part of Turkey was very strong. So, and I think this is important because, so as you just mentioned in the film, you have these constant interweavings of your personal history, your personal archives, the photos of your family, the things you record from your childhood, and then a lot of images that come from popular culture, and that are heavily affected by what happens in the world. So there's a Gulf War, there's Kennedy, there are a lot of world embracing public political events going on, and these are shaping what is happening with your characters in a certain manner, and you become a character in this narrative. And so I would like you to come back to this interweaving of, there's this whole question of petrol, which is quite important. So for the history of your family, but also for this aspiration for modern Turkey that you're talking about in the film.
So I will come back to the Kurdish question later on, but I first want to elaborate a little bit more on how I emphasize the history of Turkish Republic. It's a modern republic, as you said, and it's a country actually that was founded after the World War I, and where Ottoman Empire was basically dismantled and, you know, fell from power. And it was the British, French, and the Italian allied forces actually occupied parts of the Ottoman Empire, and then there was an independence war that is fought, and upon that victory, according to the official history, the Turkish Republic was founded according to Western ideals, and it was France actually as a role model. So everything, the administration, anything related to administration was based on the French model. We had a capital and then the il system. So in Turkish, there are also a lot of French words, like tren, gar, compartment. So there is a certain narrative actually in the official history of Turkish Republic that the country is being a white Western country and also a white nation. Whereas it becomes interesting when you follow the news, actually, you know, what happens in the country, or what happens, for example, nowadays, after Erdogan was defeated, for example, there was a war going on in the Kurdish regions of the country. So what I'm trying to elaborate on with this film is actually partly also about that. To what extent this, narrative about whiteness and Western is true or correct, or to what extent we can challenge this. Of course, a lot of stuff comes up in the film, the language, the etymology, or the history, and even actually a brief comparative study of the pop figures, idols. Everything reveals itself in the most pristine way, actually, when once you do it. So it shows, actually, it's a whiteness in drag, I would say. So that's why maybe the title is also Off White Tulips. But also, if you bring it back to the Kurdish question, I was maybe 12, and it was the peak high. you know, it was the peak of the Kurdish resistance in the 90s because there was this, like, woman who was in the administration, the prime minister of Turkey back then, Tan Suçiller, started a war against the Kurds, and I guess a lot of, like, uprisings happened in the region, but also a lot of people who were living in the diaspora in Europe came back to Kurdistan to join the armed forces, PKK, and it was a really exciting time for many, but also it was a really, the backlash was really brutal. So in that demonstration, you see a woman actually who took part at the demonstrations of the 1st of May in the year 1996. And the police brutality was so heavy that left, like, two demonstrants, like, dead. And she saw her colleagues, like, dying, and she couldn't do anything. And out of anger and desperation, she couldn't find any other thing than smashing the tulips. So she started attacking the tulips, which were basically designed by the urban, planners of some, in Istanbul you see tulips everywhere. So for me, this is a really strong image, and I remember actually how the backlash then took place in the Turkish wider mainstream media. So they were showing this image of this Kurdish woman saying, look, they're nothing more than vandals, basically. So, but, for me, there is something more to it. The anger and then, the set of emotions actually that are actually visible on this photograph is interesting for me to contemplate on. But on the other hand, I grew up in Turkey, and it was the years when the private broadcasting was brought. I was five. And then the first private channel broadcasted the Gulf War live. And I remember feeling a little bit anxious. And I guess I ended up being in a depression. They couldn't understand what was happening. But I was constantly listening to this interpreter, simultaneous translator. With her broken Turkish, she was basically translating the CNN news feeds. So Madeleine Albright, Scoot, and Patriots are extremely negative memories or affiliated with the extremely negative memories from my childhood. So, I mean, by saying so, we were in a country maybe that was safe back then, but we were feeling actually that something was about to spill in the region, and it was felt in the region, and in a country that was against the main narrative, the official narrative, that tells actually that this country is part of Europe, part of another region, another set of countries, was feeling it because I guess the proximity was felt, heartfelt.
That context that becomes a context in which James Baldwin decides to go in order to finish another country. So as somebody said earlier, in a context where he does not speak the language, where he has friends who, as one of the first images in the film, so in the first part of the film, it goes quite quick. This is why I shows a postcard and shows what is written on the postcard. And he says thank you to his friends for this most great welcome in his life or something like that. So there's something about in a moment where he didn't know where to go, it will be his Turkish friends who will welcome him. And then there is this whole, he becomes the director of a theater play with actors that do not speak his language. So this, for me, is something super interesting. Then you have these two images of the last page of another country where, I don't know if you realize, so in English, the last word of the text is home, actually. The German translation stops on a verb. So it gets to be something, this is a question of grammatical structure. So you're not at all in the same emphasis anymore. And maybe you can, what you establish in this film is a kind of as you said, is a kind of imaginary friendship with somebody who is James Baldwin and who you address as you. You're talking to him and interweaving his story with your story at a moment when you self, you decided to leave the country.
So I guess when I... It's nice, actually, that you brought up Avni Salbaş, who is actually one of the first Afro-Turks who also wrote and about this. And also, you know, there's also a history of, like, the slave trade that happened, that took place within the borders of Ottoman empires, although they claimed they it was forbidden for them, but they kind of allowed, actually, people trade humans. So, you know, some people also, you know, were, used as domestic force. Also, in the palace of the Ottomans, there were like a lot of black people working for them. So there is a wiped off, totally ignored history of like Afro-Turks. So Avni Salbaş is one of them, actually, who tried actually really hard against this narrative. And of course, James Baldwin was also looking out for these people, actually, that would be like, giving him a better understanding of the country. I think the language thing was maybe, when I think about it, like, with a little bit more reflection, you know, he was also friends with Yaşar Kemal, this like really famous Kurdish writer who wrote prolifically in Turkish. He was talking about the politics. He was not refraining from talking about the actual politics, but I think the language, as I came to understand, is something really important for James Baldwin as well. The moment he realizes that the English is the language that he needs to fight in order to, you know, channel his voice to the others, he decides to master this language. So I think the language that was spoken back then in Turkey was Turkish, and I guess it would be like really no practical for him to understand this language of the sovereigns. So I think he remained out of it by basically making, forging some other like affinities, friendships, and I guess it was rightly to do so and righteous to do so. I don't know if I missed out anything from your...
I don't think that I'm asking exhaustive questions. It's rather mm-hmm. like you take up whatever you want. And so whoever of you wants to add and come in with something else, I'm really fine. And maybe before handing you over the mic, mm-hmm. There are two figures that I just want to address, who are Beaufort Delaney and Sedat Bakay, who are both here speaking yeah. about, as fellow artists who both were or came to see Baldwin in Istanbul, and who had a quite important role in the in what is today the representation of this different stays that he had over 10 years. And maybe you could talk a bit about this, like the role that they have in your film, but also in this relations to come together.
To me, Delaney, Delaney becomes important in when we talk about like selective affinities, because I think Delaney was really important for him, and he of course wanted to come and visit Baldwin in Istanbul.
Maybe it's important to say who he is, because we are just throwing names.
Okay. Delaney was a really important painter and who's affiliated with the Harlem Renaissance, and who was admiring Van Gogh, and who used actually a lot of like yellow in his paintings. And yeah, he also came to Paris actually to live here. He's buried here, right? The cemetery of my pronunciation sucks actually, somewhere in the south of Paris. He's buried here, so he has also the French connection. So it's important because they also used to meet here in Paris. So
And he gets at some some point the a kind of a role that is such a close friend to Baldwin that he's really orienting him in different moments in his life.
So the moment that Marlon Brando comes into play is actually because they were also quite good friends. And every time actually he came to Istanbul, I think they were also talking about the civil rights movement. And as far as you know, Marlon Brando was trying to be involved in the cause or try to bring up issues actually that were otherwise not discussed in the white mainstream media. In the United States. So this friendship is also interesting to me as it is about the Turkish friends and affinities, because he always talk about a certain understanding of compassion that he feels when thinking about white people, because he believes actually that white people has long forgotten the history or misinformed to that extent that they're estranged or alienated to themselves. And so one can only like, you know, kind of approach them with a certain understanding of compassion, because they're not, you know, this is actually, you know, sometimes actually, you know, pops up in his writing. I cannot really refer to one specific book. This is something interesting, because I guess, like, you know, he is, as far as I came to understand, is someone actually who's, no matter where you're coming from, if you're confronted by him, he takes time, he slows down, and then, you know, he really tries to find the ways to tell his cause to you so it's perceived by you. And this you that you were addressing beforehand is also prolific for me, because you, in the apostrophe that I'm talking to you, is actually a movement back coming at me. It's a reverse motion. I'm just like, you know, talking about my own reflections. The act of trying to talk to you is actually me being or attempting to talk about me myself. So this is... I think he's also doing that quite often.
That's funny, because so in the off, you just sent us last week a text that you wrote and that is partly related to the film and partly not. And I think Candace and I had both a kind of big question mark when it comes to the end of the text, where you have precisely this thesis. So this like that the address of the you in a way is a way to speak to yourself. And I would have said, seeing the film, that there's something more, like either I miss something on the psychoanalytical level of this relationship, or that there's something more troubling going on, because it's precisely not only a mirroring relationship, but something that needs to take into account that you're not talking to yourself when you're trying to understand your own trajectory. And so in that address, precisely in that address that you like think about also like with the Turkish term of Arkadaş, is something that obliges you also to go out of your story in order to be in this dialogue. And I thought this is quite rich in the way you go and talk to Baldwin's biography in order to understand or to create your own.
I'm speaking on behalf of him, and I'm speaking to him, and obviously I'm not indulged in my own illusions, and I'm talking to a person who is not with us anymore. So this you becomes, frankly, I'm speaking actually to him, but not directly to him. This address, you know, the act. Exactly, yeah. I'm just not in a real conversation with him. So so it becomes like, you know, partly about myself, because there is only one receiver in the first place when making this film. I was listening my own and, you know, trying to negotiate with my own first without any other, like, you know, second person being present in the room. So... Maybe
that's
I have
a weird parallel
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The you, yeah. I believe actually, you know, it's sort of similar.
But there's also something that is like, I mean, you're working with archives. You're referring to that woman who, in the moment where she cannot attack the Turkish state, she will attack the flowers. So you are in moments where, you don't only have intersubjective relations, but also relations with objects that have a kind of resistance that will be part of that story, and that are not only like passively integrated in what you want to tell with them.
But do you think it's only passive?
No.
I don't think it's passive. And I think it's quite prolific. And or let me put it this way. Sometimes the you becomes James Baldwin, but sometimes it's directly the audience. Sometimes it's even me. You know, maybe sometimes I'm talking about my mom in a way that, you know, she would feel actually, you know, called upon. You know, this is actually, you know, whoever wants to feel like, you know, called upon is welcome to. But it's about a film, it's a film about reflections. And I think that's why the title is also Off White Tulips, because I certainly want to invoke some reflections with that.
You're speaking a lot about speaking on the behalf of, et cetera, et cetera. I was really curious about the form you took to put the content. You used photo after photo, and what I got in the end, I felt as if it was a personal photo album. Like, we know, actually, that those are not your photos, but it seems as if you're presenting it that way. Did I get that? Is that correct?
No. No, because every time actually they come actually with certain remarks or like, you know, some sort of like, I mean, they always come actually with a text explanation who's actually visible on that photo and who actually the legacies also come into.
Sure. Okay. If you had that in your brain, because how it played out to me. In terms of the repetition, as it's mixed with a lot of your personal stuff. And then you also mentioned, I wonder if with my father drank coffee with James Baldwin. And it's probably my kind of own interpretation. It is definitely my own interpretation and imagination when it comes to that. So I was quite curious about that. And one last thing, maybe if I can articulate it. He goes to Istanbul where he doesn't speak the language. From a personal point of view, I know when I first came to France, I had no words in French, for example, and deciding to live there, it gave me another way of understanding what was going on around and creating another kind of language, another kind of, way of thinking about even the personal in relation to the political and the situation that I was living in here in France.
Yeah, as I tried to elaborate a little bit on that, you know, he was meeting up with Yaşar Kemal a lot, or, you know, I mean, with other people, and I guess, like, you know, it was also, you know, giving him actually this, like, you know, time and space so he can just, like, you know, finally work on his notes and, you know, on his drafts to finalize. Yeah, because he was distracted in the United States, or he came to understand that he was also distracted in France, because actually his plan was actually to remain in France and then, you know, to fight this blockage that he was feeling when it comes to writing. But then he couldn't do it here in France, so he needed to go somewhere else. And it was basically an intuitive act of exiting. And he ended up at the door of Engin Cezar. And Engin Cezar, he met also by sheer coincidence, because Engin was sent to Yale by his family to the Actors Guild, the Actors Studio. And back then, the school was, I think, working on a production of Giovanni's Room. And Giovanni's Room, the production needed a Giovanni. And they were casting for Giovanni, and he got the role. And at the premiere of that play, they became friends. And yeah, at some point, I guess like, you know, he ended up like at his door because he liked them, or he felt the trust to happen at his door. And they were also speaking English. This is also really interesting to me because, you know, back then, actually, English was not the first choice of people or the classes, actually, to teach their kids, like, you know, to...
When you talk about Dallas, you bring Dallas up because that's, like, very much a part of my childhood, too, and how your childhood self was disappointed that they didn't actually speak Turkish. Thought that was pretty interesting.
Which in a certain way has this big parallel with the moment where Baldwin speaks about, or several moments, speaks about the Ford films and says that at some point he realizes that he was always identifying with those chasing for the Indians, and then he realizes that the Indians was actually himself. And so there's this returning of the perspective.
Of course, you know, I mean, we didn't talk about this, but I was commuting from Berlin to New York, but I was already living in Berlin when I started working on this film. And yeah, this is also part of the thing, you know, I mean, Berlin was a second stop for me, and then the third stop was then, you know, the United States. But, you know, I wasn't in Turkey anymore. So I had left Turkey long before that. So that was also, you know, about me migrating into a different context. So what I make out of it. I don't know. I talk too much.
I guess for me, the things that stand out when you're talking about whiteness as drag, or the way that whiteness kind of coincides with this kind of Western modernization of Turkey. It's interesting because I feel like race has come up a lot this summer as we worked on the show, because obviously French people have a really different way of speaking about race than maybe Americans do. And a lot of the histories that I'm dealing with, particularly the earlier ones like with Shane Bure, are moments before... the conception of race as we use it in contemporary terms were really solidified kind of in this moment of it coming to be. And a lot of that comes from legal cases or from these kind of court cases debating around slavery. And then also another interesting thing I was thinking about in a not concrete way was this moment in Jean Bure's history where they are crossing the equator and they go through this hazing ritual on the ship, and she's the only one that's not stripping down naked like the rest of the sailors. And she said, oh, it's because I was a captive of the Ottoman Turks, and you should feel bad for me. And so there's this moment where the otherness and the violence of slavery becomes like taken out of the context I usually have encountered it in, which in America, you know, is like to think about it as this moment of racialization, the invention of race coming out of a kind of slavery and its afterlives. And so to me, I was just, I guess, thinking about those two moments as this overlap of moments in our research where things we're both interested in thinking about are crumbling a little bit. Yeah.
To connect again with what you told before we saw the film, this image that actually is in the film where Baldwin gets a shoeshine in Istanbul, and your whole reflection about what would musical taste mean in terms of class in all the references to popular music that you're doing.
Yeah. I think it was Fire Next Time, I guess, where he specifically talks about this to his nephew, James. And Big Bill Brunzi is, you know, he uses Big Bill Brunzi as a reference. And he says, actually, you know, that song, actually, that I try to sing is actually a very sad song, but it sang in a way that is perceived as a happy song. When the white audiences, for example, they listen to it, they catch a happy tune. But although actually it's like, you know, talking about an intense yearning or, you know, longing, which is painful. So he's talking about this, and then, you know, that the lived experience, and it's in how many other forms actually the artist can translate this into other states is something that he talks about. And then, you know, a mere or like an easy appropriation can only be like, you know, or are always like, would always like, you know, stand out and will be visible or obvious. And he talks about that. And I guess, you know, it's really, yeah, for example, like, you know, I talk about that also in the film, because for decades, the Turkish elites or like, you know, the high arts admirers couldn't understand the rise of arabesque, which was the music of the shanty towns, or the newcomers in the city, because in Turkey, the internal migration is a big problem. A lot of people, because they were they were coming from destroyed, you know, villages, or like, you know, that the state didn't have any like, you know, enough infrastructures to support them. There was no employment, so a lot of people had to come to the big cities like Istanbul, Izmir, or Ankara, and which caused, of course, like, you know, the rapid change of those cities. In Istanbul, there are like, you know, 15 million people living now. But the photos actually that I show in my film, those are from the years actually where in Istanbul there were hardly like, you know, 1 million people, and it was in the 60s. So in like, you know, 40 years, like, you know, I mean, it exponentially grew out of proportion. So all these people actually living on the peripheries of the cities, you know, in the banlieues, or, you know, in the outskirts of Istanbul, were super fond of this music because they felt at rest in this. And also, you know, it's interesting actually how intense the dislike the object of the higher classes was towards this kind of music. So, and they didn't understand, I think. And also, you know, the direct address of like, you know, admiration, you know, sex appeal and everything. You know, this was actually from the contents of the lyrics. They felt it's too direct and too low, cheap. And, you know, it was also related to what James Baldwin was writing about, I felt. It resonated perfectly with the Turkish. Yeah, yeah. Even Ajda Pekkan started singing actually in a more ala arabesque, and or the Turkish classical music singers like, you know, Zeki Müren or, you know, Bülent Ersoy, also, you know, rapidly adapted themselves like, you know, to the changing algorithms, I would say. Yeah.
I would have one phrase, because it was one of the turning points in my last months to see this image. I would have never thought that the German Federal Republic becomes one major part in thinking about documentary filmmaking. But actually, I have to admit that they are like, German bureaucracy is something that is not to underestimate. So the fact to call a short-term resident permit attestation of fiction is just incredible as a, yeah, administrative act. Yeah, and so maybe it's more like an observation than a question to you to have this kind of precariousness that is part of this whole narration, because it was part of the way you constructed the film, becomes also part of the archive that you're constituting, and so that allows to compose a story that deals with all these state borders and that you haven't chosen and that you cross across your journey.
Do you want me to say something?
I know you can.
No.
I had to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, fiction Beschleunigung is actually provisional residence permit, and it accepts the fact that you're on German territory, but you don't have the specific papers to function there, so you can't function there, but you're on German territory, so what to do with you? So you should be addressed in some way, and then they give you a fictional residence permit, which is amazing. Yeah, the German administration is very interesting. Yeah,
I'm super glad that we had this afternoon together, and I hope that we can go on discussing over a glass. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not wrong, there are some glasses somewhere. And Jamika, Candice, in before everything, I can so many thank you to be with us.